in black letters on a grey background, iFeatures. The red and purple swirling logo for Creative England. In the centre of a shimmering starburst with a blue aureola, glass-like shards resolve to form the words BBC Films. Three shining orbs on the diagonal with the letters BFI emblazoned across them in red, white and blue. Beneath them, the words awarding funds from the National Lottery. Film forever. Creative England, BBC Films and BFI present. In association with Oldgarth Media. A 66 Pictures and iFeatures production. A young veiled bride sings from a hymn sheet. She glances up at the man standing next to her at the front of a plain stone chapel. At the back of the chapel, on either side of the door, a grey-haired man and a black woman are singing from their hymn books. The bride looks behind her at the wiry grey-haired man. Later, the long-haired young bride is prepared for bed by her black maid, who wears a white mop cap and collarless black dress, and who towers above her young mistress. She helps her into a full-sleeved, long cotton nightgown. The maid turns her round and carefully fastens the buttons at the neck of the nightgown.
You cold?
No.
Nervous?
No.
Later, the bride sits on the bed with a calm, watchful expression. She looks towards the opening bedroom door. She stands up and directs her gaze at a tall man with shoulder-length dark hair, moustache and beard.
Are you comfortable?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're not cold?
No.
Well, this house gets very cold.
I'm thick-skinned.
The man is wearing a dressing gown.
You'll find that there can be a draft. Won't be like what you're used to.
She glances at the gap under the door.
You ought to keep to the house.
But I don't mind the fresh air.
You'll be more comfortable in the house.
I like the fresh air. I like being outside.
Take it off.
He leans against the sill of a shuttered casement window.
Your nightdress, take it off.
Her lips tightening. She nods and starts to unfasten the buttons at her cuffs and at the neck of her nightdress. She pulls the nightdress over her head, revealing her nakedness beneath. She drops the garment to the floor, standing at one side of the bed facing the man she has married, at the other end of the room. He picks up the bedside lamp and blows out the candle. He turns away from her and slips off his dressing gown, revealing a pair of white long johns. Without looking at her, he gets into the bed, pulls up the cover, and lies with his back to her. She remains standing in the middle of the room. The title, in white capitals, over the bleak moorland. Lady Macbeth. The bride, wearing a voluminous sea-green gown, sits on the wide sill of an upper-floor window of her marital bedroom, gazing out. The young woman, with a pert nose and flawless skin, looks out over a sea of dense, leafy trees. Her hair is combed in a low bun. There's a thin border of lace at her neck. She wears discreet earrings and a blue stone brooch. At night, her maid bends over her to brush her long, brown hair. The bride winces as the brush tugs. She lies in her marital bed in her nightgown, her head turned away from her husband, who's asleep on his back. Cool light pours in through the windows of the somber wood-paneled dining room. The maid opens the door of the bedroom and crosses to the left-hand casement window to fold back the shutters. The bride, sleeping soundly alone in the bed, doesn't stir. Her eyes open as daylight floods her face. The maid ties her into her corset. The bride, who wears undergarments and a conical floor-length hoop fastened at her waist, stares out of the window as she leans on the back of a chair to keep her balance. Later, she walks down a hallway in the house, passing an iron stove and a housemaid opening windows onto the hall. Wearing the same satin kingfisher green dress, the young bride comes down the stairs to the ground floor. A rear view of the bride sitting upright and still in front of an oak mantelpiece with two pewter vases at either end. Seen from the front, she sits with her hands clasped on her lap, the skirts of her gown spread out on either side of her, on an ornate double-scroll end settee with a buttoned back in a pale gold fabric. The settee stands in the centre of a tastefully decorated parlour of exquisite antique furniture. The hands on the grandfather clock at the back of the room indicate 11 o'clock. The bride's eyes close. Her head drops forward. After dark in the wood-paneled dining room, dimly lit wall sconces dotted about the room, the bride sits at the head of the table. Her husband hovers by the door at the far end of the room, listening to a cluster of older, bewhiskered men. The bride gets up.
So you'll not go to London then?
But my son will stay here with his wife. Play master or something.
The husband eyes her drunkenly as she approaches the door. The father nods to his son, Alexander, who nods to her.
Good night.
The men bow as she leaves.
You're very tired lately, Catherine.
The bride turns to her father-in-law, Boris, who's followed her out of the dining room.
You will wait up for your husband.
I am perhaps a little overtired this evening,
You will wait up, Catherine.
I will try, sir.
She turns on her heel and goes.
Sit with Mrs. Lester. See that she doesn't fall asleep.
The maid bows to Boris and follows Catherine upstairs. She sits on a chair watching her mistress with her chin resting on her elbow on the rim of the bedstead. Catherine's eyes slowly close.
I'm awake. Stop staring, Anna.
But Mr. Lester
I know what Mr. Lester said, but I'm awake, so there's no need to stare at me.
Catherine pats her cheeks. Anna sits back down. Catherine yawns and rubs her face. Anna leaps up.
Stand up.
Catherine, sitting on her bed, offers her husband her profile.
Stand!
With a contemptuous glance, she stands up.
Leave.
Anna curtsies and goes. Alexander, a drink still in his hand, turns to look at Catherine, who stands at the side of the bed, stifling a disdainful laugh.
Stop smiling. Take your nightdress off.
She crosses the room to a bare wall and starts to unbutton her nightdress. She glances round at Alexander, who's slouched on a chair next to the fireplace. She pulls off the nightdress and turns her head in his direction.
Face the wall.
She faces the wall, which is bare save for a small oval picture. She glances round.
Face the wall!
She has broad shoulders, a narrow waist, and full, wide hips. She listens impassively to the sounds coming from across the room. She turns to look at him, and then turns back to the wall. A horse-drawn carriage skirts a woodland of spindly trees and drives off. Catherine sits at the table with her father-in-law, Boris Lester.
Where is my husband gone?
Away.
Away?
That's what I said.
To do what?
Nothing for you to concern yourself with.
But I do concern myself.
She raises her angry almond-shaped eyes at him.
There's been an explosion at the colliery at Amble.
Explosion? How did that happen?
Yes, Catherine. An explosion. I leave for London this morning. You'll be on your own for a while. Perhaps you'll find that your energy is restored after a little of your own company. And when your husband returns, you can resume your duties with more rigour. Madam.
Her eyes flash with resentment. He wipes his mouth, throws down his napkin and stomps from the table, leaving her staring after him with a morose expression. She takes some red currants and bites into them. Hearing him leave through the front door, she stands up from the table and goes to the open door of the dining room. She peers out. Seeing that the house is empty, she bites on another red currant and closes the door. She goes over to a window. And folds back the shutters. She steps away from the window, the light shining on her face. Her hair loose down her back, Catherine walks out of a back door out into a paved courtyard. Picking up her skirts, she starts to run. She strides onto the wild moorland, drawing a shawl around her shoulders. The wind blows through her long chestnut hair. She surveys the wild, bleak landscape with a small smile of satisfaction. In the morning, Anna comes down the two steps to the corridor, painted in dove grey and white, towards Catherine's bedroom. Catherine stirs as she comes in. She raises herself up for the start of another day. Their duties done, Anna and the housemaid leave the house by the glassed French windows on the ground floor. A slim ginger cat jumps from a sideboard up to the mantelpiece in the parlour, where Catherine, in her sea-green gown and her hair combed back in a bun, is fast asleep on the settee, her feet bare. She raises her head with a puzzled look. She sits up and ponders. Hurriedly, she pulls on her boots. She goes to the window and just catches someone run past. She comes downstairs, her interest spiked. As she walks along the yard, the housemaid runs past her. With a determined gait, Catherine directs herself towards the shouting. She comes into an outbuilding where male servants are horsing about. A naked female foot dangles into view. One of the men looks at Catherine brazenly.
We're just taking a break, Mum.
On my husband's time.
Yeah, we'll get straight back to it.
She stares up at the female foot protruding from a white sheet, hanging down from the ceiling like a sack.
We're weighing a pig. Mom. Weighing a sow, to be precise.
The young man of mixed race, looks at her defiantly.
So?
As you see.
He slaps the sack with a cheeky smile.
Take her down. I said take her down. Face the wall. And stop smiling.
The men do as she says, as the sack is winched down. Catherine prowls around the room. The handsome, insolent servant glances round at her. She gives him a long look. Anna, holding the crumpled sheet in front of her to hide her nakedness, scrambles from the floor and scampers away. The servant, still facing the wall, takes a long drag of a cigarette. Catherine doesn't take her eyes off him.
May we turn around yet, Mom?
How much would I weigh?
The young man slowly turns to face her.
Would you like me to check?
Guess.
He moves towards her. And scoops her up in his arms. The others watch as she struggles against him, finally pushing him away. The others watch nervously as she smooths down her hair.
You have wasted quite enough of my husband's good time and good money. I shall be keeping an eye on you, gentlemen.
The insolent fellow thrown to the ground watches her go.
Anna?
Oh, Mama, if I can explain.
What was his name? The one that called you a pig, Anna, what was his name?
Sebastian, ma'am.
Is he new?
Yes, ma'am, he's a new groomsman.
Reaching the landing, Catherine looks back at Anna.
Is there something else, Anna?
No, ma'am.
The next morning, the housemaid opens the shutters in the corridor. Anna comes into Catherine's room to find her up.
My boots, Anna.
It's still cold, I think.
It's warm enough.
Mr. Lester said that you
yes.
wanted to... It's going to rain a day, ma'am.
Good.
Catherine fastens her own corset. Later, she marches across the moors, with the morning sun catching the light in her long, loose brown hair.
Are you lost?
Sebastian sees her across the tops of the long grass.
House is in the other direction, Mom.
She pretends to ignore him. Sebastian leads his hunting dog on a leash.
Mrs. Lester!
She smiles to herself. She strides on across the wide stretch of moorland. Later, Anna pours a jug of water over Catherine's back.
Anna, it's too hot.
Your skin's too cold. It only feels too hot because the cold's gotten into your bones and it's settling there, that's all.
If it feels too hot, then it is too hot. Anna, you're hurting me. Anna. Anna, stop it! What's wrong with you?
Sorry.
My skin all red.
You'll catch a fever, Mum.
It's just a bit of fresh air, Anna. And there's no need for you to stare at me currently, is there? It's unnerving.
Anna lowers her eyes. At night, a blanket of cloud weighs heavily on the dark, deserted moorland landscape. Catherine, wrapped in a peach-coloured robe, sits cross-legged next to the fireplace, drying the ends of her long hair with a towel. A flash of fearfulness crosses Catherine's face as she looks towards the door. She gets up and crosses to the door, listening, before she opens it. Sebastian appears sheepishly in the doorway of the next door room.
I'm terribly bored, Mrs. Lester.
Perhaps you should dedicate more time towards your work.
She goes to shut her door, but he forces it open. He whips inside the room.
Aren't you bored, Catherine?
You can't call me that. Get out. Get out.
He moves further into the room.
What do you want?
A faint smile hovers on his lips as he moves closer. As she tries to unfasten the shutters, he grabs her by the waist and pushes her against a wall with his hand over her mouth. She bites him and pushes him off her. Undeterred, he leans down towards her and steals a kiss on her lips. She pushes him away, then stares, her cheeks glowing. She moves towards him, grabs his face in her hands, and kisses him on the mouth. They fall onto the bed, Catherine on top of him. He rolls her over. She sits up and starts to unbutton his shirt. He lies on top of her, opening the front of her gown, and thrusts himself inside her. Subside breathlessly and fall onto their backs. Then they look at each other. Morning light floods the house. Anna comes down the steps along the corridor towards the bedroom. She finds Catherine fast asleep in bed, the pink robe lying in a heap on the floor. As she opens the first shutter, she notices the robe and Catherine's bare arm dangling down. She picks the robe up and drapes it on the back of a chair. Catherine's eyes open, but close as rapidly as Anna opens the second shutter, bringing bright sunlight into the room. Catherine smiles to herself as Anna carefully closes the bedroom door. She listens at the door and then goes. Catherine chortles, burying her face in her pillow. At the dining table, the cat eats the remains of lunch for one, an upturned cup, a ruffled lace cloth, suggesting a hasty departure from the table. Catherine and Sebastian are in the bedroom, having passionate sex. Later, wearing a dark grey dress, Catherine sits serenely poised as Anna pours her a cup of tea. She looks across the room and smiles politely. Then she stirs her tea. The white-haired vicar sitting facing her brings his cup to the saucer and watches her intently as she takes a sip, her soft brown eyes holding him in her gaze.
You must be anticipating the return of your father-in-law, Mrs. Lester, and your husband.
I must.
It is not good to be without company for too long, I think.
And the recent decline in your health...
My health?
Your absence from church, madam. No doubt brought on by their absence.
No doubt.
Perhaps a little more time spent indoors, Mrs. Lester. I understand you've been taking the air lately. Perhaps a little more solitude and reflection will do.
Catherine glances at Anna's guilty side view. The vicar takes another sip.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Catherine rises, bringing the occasion to an unexpectedly swift end. The vicar puts down his tea as he hastily gets to his feet. In the outbuilding, Sebastian and Catherine kiss passionately, devouring each other's lips. A small wooden footbridge crosses a steep-sided woodland gully. Anna comes down the slope, carrying a trug. She puts it down on the leafy ground, near to the roots of a large tree, and starts to pick mushrooms. She looks up at the sound of the barking and straightens nervously.
Sorry for you, Anna.
As Sebastian comes towards her with his dog on a leash.
I said, sorry for you, Anna.
And for you, sir.
She speaks. Not so. You're a good dog going around. Bet she gets restless if she's tied up too long.
She was, sir.
Was what?
Tied up too long.
He breaks her knowing gaze.
Mr. Lester wouldn't be happy, sir, if you knew what was happening in his absence.
What's been happening in his absence, Anna?
He comes up to her and she lowers her eyes.
The dogs, sir.
Thank you, Anna. I'll look into that. It's good of you to keep such a close eye on things.
He walks on along the gully. At the house, Catherine opens the back door and pulls Sebastian in by his hand. As their naked bodies press against each other and they fall on the bed, Anna spies on them through a keyhole. Sebastian raises his head and looks straight at the door, as if aware of Anna's presence. She backs away. She picks up her lamp and hurries off. A horse and cart comes along the outside of the wood. Anna comes into Catherine's room and marches over to the shutters.
Mr. Lester has returned, ma'am.
My husband?
No, ma'am.
Where is he, Anna?
He's gone up to the fields, ma'am. He said not to expect him till dinner.
Catherine slides out of the bed, holding the sheet in front of her naked body. Wearing her kingfisher blue dress, she seats herself on the settee and arranges her skirts in her customary position. She takes deep breaths. Anna laces her into her corset as Catherine drinks red wine from a glass. A half-full bottle stands on the mantelpiece. Boris Lester sits stiffly at the head of the oak table with some cold chicken on his plate. He stands as Catherine comes in. With his hands behind his back, he watches her approach the table.
Catherine?
Welcome home, sir.
She adjusts her chair and sits down. She reaches for the glass of white wine next to her plate and takes a sip, without letting go of the glass. Lester puts his napkin on his lap.
Have you kept well?
I have. Thank you, sir.
You haven't been running the house in my absence.
I have.
That wasn't a question. Where's your husband?
Wherever you put him.
She giggles into her wine.
You've heard nothing from him?
Not a word.
Get a bottle of the flurry.
Anna curtsies and goes off into the kitchen.
He wants a flurry.
Well, there's none of that left.
None of it?
Not a drop. She's drank it all.
Anna comes back to the dining room, where Lester is eating, and Catherine is pacing. She flops into a chair and looks inquiringly at Anna.
Excuse me, sir, but there's none of the flurry left.
That's impossible. Look again.
I'm afraid there's none left, sir. Cook said it had all gone.
And how exactly has it all gone?
Catherine, slouched on the chair, shoots a look at Anna.
I don't know, sir.
You don't know?
No, sir.
And the cook, does she not know?
No, sir.
Do you not think it necessary to keep an account of what happens to my property in this household? All my property. Am I to assume you drank it?
No, sir.
And yet you can offer no other explanation?
No, sir.
Get down.
For a moment, Anna is frozen to the spot.
Sir.
On your hands and knees.
Then she slowly lowers herself to the floor.
You behave like an animal, and I'll treat you like an animal. Now get out.
As Lester goes on eating, Anna turns her body and crawls out of the room on all fours. Catherine, watching from the chair, chews a nail. She returns to the table as her father-in-law chews his food. In the outhouse, Sebastian is asleep on the ground, his face to the wall. Light floods the room. He turns his face. Lester beats him with a stick. His fellow worker watches mutely.
Lock him up.
Boris Lester leaves the outbuilding. Sebastian grimaces with pain. The other man pulls him up roughly. Catherine, in her blue day dress, runs to the outhouse. She pushes open a heavy door and looks inside. Finding no one, she runs along the length of the outbuilding and tries another door.
Sebastian!
Boris confronts her on the staircase of the house.
I have no desire to see you until I've had time to consider what I'm going to do with you.
Let him out.
You are entirely without shame.
I have nothing to be ashamed of.
Nothing to be ashamed of? Do you have any idea of the damage that you're capable of bringing upon this family? You have failed miserably in every one of your marital duties. More specifically, to provide your husband with a legitimate heir.
Where is your son? Where is he? He has made that impossible. Let him out.
Lester slaps her viciously on the face. She brings her hand to her cheek. He goes. Later, she settles herself on the settee in the parlour, in front of the mantelpiece. Her cheeks are taut, her eyes vengeful. Her fingers interlace with agitation. Sebastian is lying on bare earth in an outbuilding, staring numbly. Anna opens Catherine's door. She sees that the bed is empty. She runs out of the room.
You've had enough time to contemplate, I hope, and to take the opportunity to meditate upon your duties as a wife, Catherine, in this household above anything else.
Give me the key or let him out.
She hurls a glass at the door next to her.
Leave it!
Anna recoils. He picks up his plate.
I can't bear to look at you.
And leaves the dining room. Catherine heaves a sigh. She picks up a dining chair and places it against the door as Anna gets on her hands and knees to pick up the broken glass pieces. Catherine draws back Lester's chair and sits down in his place. She faces the door blocked by the chair, then tilts her head to Anna.
Sit. Sit.
Anna gets to her feet and, smoothing down her apron, edges to the table as Catherine pours tea. Anna tentatively pulls out a chair and sits down.
Eat.
I'm not.
Eat with me. I hate to eat alone. Tell me about your family, Anna. Tell me about your home.
I haven't been home in a very long time, Mum. I'm not sure I know what home is.
Do you have any brothers? Anna?
Anna looks alarmed by the noises from next door.
Or sisters? How many sisters do you have?
He's... We should be...
What are the names of your sisters, Anna?
Catherine!
Sit back down, Anna.
No,
Sit down!
Anna stares numbly as Catherine calmly stirs her tea. As the noises outside the dining room door cease, Anna clutches her stomach.
Run to the village for a doctor. Quick, go.
Catherine remains seated at the table. The cat jumps up on the sideboard. Anna hurtles through the woods, holding up her skirts as she runs. She pounds on a door. A barred door to a stall opens. Sebastian, lying on the ground next to a horse, raises his head. Catherine pulls up his shirt and sees the lesions on his back. She kisses his wounds, licking them with her tongue. At the house, Anna breathes agitatedly as the doctor looks down at Boris lying on the dining room table. In a small room, she lies curled up, her face a grimace of unhappiness. Catherine sits at the breakfast table with a teaspoon in her hand, staring at the cat sitting in the facing chair. The housemaid brings Catherine a wax-sealed letter. She picks it up and slits it open with a knife.
He'll not return for the funeral. He said as much.
We won't have long.
He won't come back. He hated his father. He hates me. Perhaps he just won't come back.
Sebastian lies on Catherine's back on her bed. She's wearing mourning black and he is naked. At the funeral parlour between two large flower arrangements, she poses for a photograph next to the upstanding coffin that contains her dead father-in-law. Staff filed respectfully past the body, laid out in his coffin in the dining room. The last but one in line is Anna, who stops to look Catherine in the eye. Catherine remains impassive. The housemaid gives a quick bob and scurries after Anna. Catherine walks alongside Boris's body. She glances at him with indifference and walks out of the room. In her bedroom, she arranges the collar of Sebastian's pristine white nightshirt.
There. Very fine indeed. Man of the house.
She cups his worried face in her hands and kisses him gently and lovingly. Next morning, she chews at a nail as Anna brings her a plate of eggs.
Anna?
Anna turns to face her.
Anna, when you are spoken to, you ought to respond.
She touches her throat.
Anna, I'm going to ask one of the maids, that young girl, to prepare and bring me breakfast. And all my meals from now on. Just as a precaution.
She offers Anna her plate of uneaten breakfast. Anna takes the plate from her. In the kitchen, she pounds some dough.
Could have been the mushrooms or his heart. Nobody's blaming you, Anna, so I don't know why you're being so hard on yourself. You're careful, and he was old, and he had a weak stomach. You heard what Dr. Burden said yourself. And the master will be home before long, and this will all be done with. Anna, I wish that you would speak again. Promise you'll try.
Anna gives no hint of an answer. Outside, a blanket of cloud hangs over a lake.
She won't speak. She's mute.
What if it comes back?
It won't.
They're lying on some rocks, wrapped in each other's arms.
Do you love me?
Of course.
Do you adore me?
Of course.
Could you do without me? Could you do without me?
He pecks her on the nose.
It's husbands and wives that kiss like that.
He kisses her full on the lips.
Did your husband kiss you, Catherine?
She rests her head on his chest.
She won't speak. You know I shan't be parted from your life, Sebastian. Through hell and high water, I will follow you. To the cross, to the prison, to the grave, to the sky. I'd rather stop you breathing than have you doubt how I feel.
She kisses him again and snuggles in his arms. Sebastian looks fearful. They lie together asleep in bed, both naked. Catherine suddenly stirs and turns to her window. She gets out of bed and peeps through the shutters. She sees a white horse tethered below. She backs away from the shutters, throwing on her nightgown.
Sebastian!
Home, is it?
My husband has returned.
He woozily pulls on his trousers.
What should we do? Sebastian!
Could you just...
Shut up!
She giggles as he struggles to keep his balance.
You look like a little boy.
Could you just shut up for 1 second? And let me think.
He grabs his stuff. Goes to the door.
Go out there.
Go out there. Why, watch it. I'm gonna pretend to be your lady and fucking witch.
She pushes him out of the door. She runs to the other side of the bed and lights the candle in the table lamp. She smooths down the bed, buttons up her nightgown, and sits cross-legged on the bed. Alexander appears.
You're home.
You're awake.
I heard the horse.
I walked her down the lane. I'm surprised you heard.
I've been sleeping lightly ever since your father died. We had to have his funeral in your absence.
I couldn't let him rot in a corner, could you? I shall place my feet on his grave in the morning. You have the bed made up for two every night?
Ever since your letter came, I had no indication of when you might be returning. And thank goodness I did. You must be tired.
No.
He picks up a belt from the floor.
I found it in the fields.
And decided to keep it?
Hold my skirts up.
Are your skirts in danger of falling down?
No, sir.
You've grown fatter.
The cook has made an effort to find food to my taste, perhaps.
Your face is fatter. You're altogether larger than when I left.
She smiles glibly.
Perhaps you'd like some tea.
He watches her leave the bedroom. She tiptoes down the corridor. He sits with his hands clasped, brooding. He turns as she comes back into the room. She brings in a tea tray and sets it down on an oak chest. She pours them both a cup from a china teapot. Alexander sits in his chair next to an unlit fireplace, scowling. She brings him his tea, then perches on the blanket box at the foot of the bed. They both sip their tea. He puts his cup down on a small round table next to him.
So, you have become a whore in my absence, Catherine.
She looks at him numbly.
You think me to be stupid, perhaps. But perhaps you had no idea that your whoring had been noticed. You seem surprised. I'm surprised at the news of you opening your legs and your cunt for any worthless dog should have travelled across the county and reached my ears, but then you opened your legs so very wide, Catherine. And you've acted so very shamelessly and so very stupidly, and you've begun to smell, Catherine. You've gotten so fat and foul-smelling, it was inevitable that the whole county would hear of your behaviour. My father bought you, along with a piece of land not fit enough for a cow to graze upon. I do not like being talked about, madam. I do not like being laughed at. I do not like owning a whore. You will alter your behaviour, madam.
And how will I alter my behaviour, sir?
You will never see that man again. He will be sent from this house, and you will remain here, indoors, with your prayer book.
He takes another sip. She looks at him with calm loathing, then drops her gaze. She puts down her teacup. She goes to the bedroom door. She slips through it, leaving it ajar. Then she comes back, holding her bare-chested lover by the hand. Alexander starts in surprise. She pushes Sebastian down on the bed. and keeping her eyes fixed on her husband, proceeds to undo Sebastian's trousers, lifts up her nightdress, and climbs on top of him. Alexander slaps her. He and Sebastian start to fight, rolling off the bed. Sebastian seizes him by the waist. Alexander pins him against the wall. Catherine tries to pull him off. He knocks her down. He pushes Sebastian against the wall and tries to gouge out his eyes. Catherine hits him with a firearm. He crumples to the floor. She drops the iron and sinks to the floor. Blood pools from Alexander's head. She looks at her hands and then crawls over to Sebastian, who stares numbly at his dead employer. Catherine slinks down at Sebastian's side and cups his face, kissing him on his eyes and mouth. He gently pushes her off him and leans forward to take a closer look at Alexander. In the early hours of the morning, he drags the corpse, the head covered by a blanket, into a freshly dug grave in the woods. He crawls out of the grave and starts to shovel earth on top of the body. Catherine, in a coat over her blood-stained nightgown, walks Alexander's white horse into the middle of the gully. She cocks a rifle and points it at the horse. The shot sends her falling backwards. The horse's legs give way and he staggers. Catherine gets up. Again, she's knocked down. And the horse falls. She watches him become still. With her bare hands, she starts to cover him in earth, her face grimacing amid her sobs. Seen from a distance, she wades into a pond to wash. Mist wafts across the stark moorland. At the house, the fire iron stands propped up against the marble surround of the cold fireplace. Catherine, sitting up in bed with Sebastian's head on her chest, stares at it blankly.
I can't sleep.
Try.
I've tried. Can you sleep?
I'll sit up until you can.
I can't.
She sits up and bends her head to kiss his cheek.
Every time I close my eyes, I see his face. Can you just get off me?
He pushes her off him and sits slumped over the side of the bed as she moves towards him. He rams on her.
How can you? Just like it was before. It's making me sick. I feel sick constantly.
It won't end unless you let it.
You let it?
For you. And for me. Sebastian, he was going to kill you. He was weak. We did it so that we could be together here. No more bowing and not being who you deserve to be.
You did it for us.
We did it.
He looks into her calm, loving eyes. She kisses him tenderly. He pulls her on top of him. Later, as he buttons the cuffs of a fine white linen shirt beneath a tailored grey waistcoat, Catherine watches him with a smile. She stretches out her bare leg and prods his back with her foot. He turns to look at her, and they share the smile. Later, Catherine in her pink dressing gown sits at the breakfast table eating red fruit, with Sebastian sitting stiffly opposite her, all buttoned up in a fine suit. Anna pours tea for Catherine, and after a moment's hesitation, pours one for Sebastian. At the door, she glances back at them. Autumn sunlight bathes the top of the forest in its golden glow. Catherine and Sebastian lie on a sheet in the bedroom, their naked bodies entwined. Flies buzz around the empty eye cavity of the dead horse on the leafy forest floor. A horse and trap drives along the outside of the wood. Catherine looks out of the window of her bedroom. A smartly dressed little boy of mixed race sits on the settee in the parlour.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
Teddy was your husband's ward.
Who's Teddy?
This is Teddy.
I'm sorry, you're repeating yourself.
It's a shock. I understand.
My husband had no ward.
Mr. Lester knew my daughter very well some time ago and was fond of her. He fathered a child by her.
I beg your pardon?
And after my daughter's death, he did the honourable thing and made Teddy his ward. He has been with us lately. We're at Amble, near the colliery.
I'm afraid this is impossible.
Your husband was careful to draw up papers. I'm sorry for the shock.
You needn't apologise for an impossibility. I'm just sorry that you've had a wasted journey.
Given Mr. Lester's recent demise...
My husband is not deceased.
He is assumed so.
He is missing.
But presumed dead.
He is missing, and apparently you saw him so soon.
We did.
Then perhaps you could advise me as to what has become of him.
You seem very well. And certain he was to come here next. He said it was a matter of urgency. We can't imagine what might have happened to him.
I'm terribly anxious.
I'm sure. There are papers, Mrs. Lester. I am sorry.
The boy's grandmother glances around at Anna, who's standing at the sideboard.
Perhaps we might have tea.
Anna curtsies and goes. Teddy whispers to his grandmother, Agnes. Catherine looks unsettled.
What is it?
He says you're the prettiest lady he has ever seen.
Catherine looks at Teddy, who eyes her admiringly. A maid brings in a case and a hat box, and men move in and out of the house with other luggage. Agnes stands at the window of Catherine's bedroom. She looks around the room with a proprietorial air. As she moves towards the door, she notices a waist-high clothes rail and touches the item of clothing hanging on it. Then she goes. In the outbuilding, Catherine leans against the wall and Sebastian paces agitatedly.
She's lying.
She has papers.
She's forging them. You don't think that every man and woman in the county with half a brain and an empty pocket isn't coming up with some similar scheme?
She has legitimate papers.
I thought you said he couldn't fuck you.
He couldn't.
Or wouldn't.
Catherine, sitting at the dining table, plays with her food, a morose expression on her face.
Catherine.
What? Sorry, I wasn't. You were saying?
I was saying that perhaps it might be best if Teddy took your room. Then he's next to my room, and it's larger. You don't need all that space.
No.
No?
No, I don't need all that space.
After Christmas, then?
Yes. And perhaps I'll take your room. You'll be used to smaller spaces from your days in your tiny house, Agnes.
She smiles coolly at Agnes. Agnes returns the mirthless smile. Teddy, in his white Peter Pan collar and full-sleeved shirt, is unaware of the tension in the air. Sebastian huddles under some coats in a corner of the outbuilding, a bottle next to him. Catherine is asleep in her bed. She stirs and turns onto her back. She sits up and goes to stand. She sinks to her knees in agony. She slowly stands up, touching the small of her back. In her black day dress, she makes her way to the outbuilding.
Catherine! Can I come?
She glances round at the outbuilding, then leads Teddy away. Sebastian, dressed in his own clothes, watches bitterly from the door of the outbuilding. Catherine and Teddy sit in a meadow of long grass.
What are those ones?
He points to the sky.
Swallows. Look, watch them glide. Aren't they beautiful?
I think you're beautiful.
He tries to take her by the hand. She pulls away.
How do you know that?
What?
Names of birds.
My mother taught me. She'd take us on long walks and teach us the names of birds. And trees.
Outside things.
Yes.
Do you miss your mother?
Yes. Do you?
Yes.
She takes his hand in hers and squeezes it gently. Sebastian sits mournfully near the wooden bridge across the steep, leafy gully, waiting. He looks towards a sound, coming from somewhere to the side. He crawls out and sees Anna emerging from under the bridge, carrying her trug. He edges towards her. She backs away.
You don't mind if I join you, do you?
Her brown eyes watch him fearfully.
I just want to walk a little with you, Anna. Won't scare you. Promise.
In the house, Teddy is in his outdoor clothes, asleep on Catherine's bed. Catherine, in her undergarments, examines her profile in a mirror. She touches her growing belly and then looks back at her reflection, just as Anna appears behind her with some linen. She hands over the linen and quickly retreats. At night, Catherine is awake in bed, her fingers interlacing in agitation. In her pink satin robe over her nightdress, she walks into the outbuilding, its floor littered with straw, and she crouches down behind Sebastian, who is fast asleep. She moves towards him and kisses him tenderly on the cheek.
Get off me.
He pushes her to the floor. She moves towards him.
I need to talk to you. I need to tell you
something. Back to your house and your little master, Catherine.
Please come inside. I can't.
If I come inside, then we're found out. If we're found out, then I'll hang. Well, that boy's here. I'm out here. That's the end of it. Get out!
Slowly, she raises herself up, clutching her belly. With a look of reproach, she sweeps out of the building. She stands at the window of the parlor, her face still. Slowly, she climbs the staircase, holding up her skirts. She sits on the wide sill of her bedroom window, holding her belly. Looking down into the courtyard, she watches a female maid throw a ball to Teddy, who hits it with a cricket bat. Beyond the walls of the courtyard, she spots Anna walking off with her trug and Sebastian following a few paces behind her, smoking a cigarette. She leans forward in surprise.
Sebastian!
Catherine!
What's me?
I'm watching from upstairs, Teddy.
Answer me, please!
Not now, Teddy.
Please!
Not now.
Please!
Get off! Ah! Leave me alone!
No!
Teddy drops his bat and runs off.
Sebastian! Sebastian!
Sebastian goes on walking, as if he hasn't heard her. Catherine lies fully clothed on her bed, twisting her wedding ring on her finger.
Sebastian? Sebastian?
Mom?
A maid comes in.
What is it?
I'm sorry, Mum, but it's the little boy. We can't find him anywhere.
Catherine gets off the bed with a look of impatience, glancing out of the window as she goes to the door. The staff scour the woods, fanning out as they walk through the undergrowth. Deep in the woods, Sebastian scrambles up the steep gully. He walks along a stream up on the moors. He comes past a fast-moving torrent moving towards a waterfall in the dim light. He crouches down as he sees Teddy sitting up ahead of him, overlooking the waterfall. He looks down at the swirling torrent below and wrestles with his emotions. He gets to his feet and moves closer to the boy sitting above the water, unaware that he's being watched. Sebastian, standing a few feet from the boy, contemplates what to do. At the house, Catherine sits on the settee, watching Agnes's anguished face as she stares into the fireplace. White-haired Dr. Borden stands at the other end of the fireplace. Catherine sits rigidly with her hands clasped over her belly. She turns towards the commotion outside. Cook runs in.
Teddy!
He was up at the waterfall. He's freezing.
Followed by Sebastian with Teddy in his arms.
Get some blankets.
Who are you? How dare you walk into this house and give orders? Get out!
I saved him!
Get out!
As Sebastian storms out, Catherine runs to the door.
Teddy!
She looks across at Agnes attending to Teddy and leaves the room.
I will not stay here. Be humiliated for the sake of that boy.
Sebastian!
We're not Catherine!
What can I do? Tell me what to do. I will do anything.
It's too late!
What? What do you mean?
I stood in front of him, Catherine. But that waterfall, that perfect drop. One step behind him. And I'm... It's too late.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be if you trust me.
She holds him by the chin, and he wavers. In the house, Agnes sits at the boy's side as he sleeps on the settee. Catherine comes back into the room. Anna walks out past her. Catherine stands looking across at Agnes, whose eyes are heavy.
You should go to bed.
I can't.
One of us should get some sleep.
I wouldn't sleep.
Lie down for a while. I'll sit up with him. You need some rest and he'll need you when he wakes up.
Agnes brings her hand to her collar.
Just for an hour or so.
If you like.
She gets to her feet. Catherine steps towards her with a solicitor's smile and holds out her hands. Agnes kisses her on the cheek. With a quick glance at Teddy, Agnes goes. The smile fades from Catherine's face as she turns to look at the boy with a cold, calculating expression. The curly-haired boy is sleeping peacefully, snuggled up under a blanket. Catherine's eyes, as she contemplates him, fill with hatred. She moves slowly to a pair of shutters in the far corner of the room. She opens one shutter and the glazed door behind it. Sebastian comes into the room. Carefully, she closes the door. They both cross the room, glancing at one another. Sebastian tiptoes to one side. Catherine comes to sit next to the sleeping boy on the settee. Teddy sits up and she pushes him gently back down. He sits up again and she pushes him more roughly.
What are you doing?
Shh.
Let me go. Backwards.
Shh, 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 shh.
Help! I'm back now.
She presses the pillow over his face. Sebastian stands over the back of the settee as Teddy struggles. Holding down his kicking feet. Teddy stops struggling. Catherine, bent over the boy, doesn't move. Sebastian, leaning over the back of the settee, looks haunted. Catherine crouches by the settee and looks across at him. She stands up and reaches to touch his face. He recoils.
It is done. Sebastian.
He looks into her calm face.
Go wait until I come. Come.
He steps away from the settee, looking down at the dead boy. Then shuffles across the room, glancing back at Catherine as he heads for the door. She carefully puts the pillow back under the boy's head. She sits in the chair, with her back to the shuttered window next to the settee, her cheeks flushed, taking long, deep breaths. As light filters in through the partly open shutter, and the room brightens, she fights back her sobs. Anna comes in with a blanket. She stares at Catherine, then at Teddy, and runs back out to the kitchen. Catherine methodically wipes her eyes and then her cheeks. She exhales softly as she composes herself. In the wood, Sebastian kneels down on the leafy woodland floor and sobs unconsolably. He sits up, his head bowed, spittle drooling from his mouth. He hurtles through the wood. Agnes sits at the dining table, her face a rictus of sorrow, pressing a handkerchief in her hand as Catherine talks to the doctor.
I must have fallen asleep for 10 minutes, perhaps. When I woke, he wasn't breathing.
Can you remember what time that was, Mrs. Lester?
Just before the girl came in. I couldn't say exactly. 5, perhaps? I was upset.
Of course. I wonder...
What?
Look, could you have been asleep longer than you thought? Might someone have taken the opportunity to come in? There were bruises.
From the waterfall?
They weren't there before.
Another man listens to Catherine.
When I woke, the boy was dead.
Catherine.
He must have gotten the bruises from the waterfall.
Dr. Burton says not.
Can Dr. Burton swear to it? Have we not suffered enough?
Mrs. Lester.
Forgive me.
Mrs. Lester, you need a real seat.
Catherine looks up as Sebastian lumbers into the room.
We killed the boy.
I beg your pardon, sir. Who are you?
She killed him. She held a pillow over his face, and I held his legs. She killed Alexander Lester. She killed Boris Lester, poisoned him with mushrooms, and let him die. She killed the boy. She killed that boy so that we could be together. I loved her.
Catherine, standing in front of the mantelpiece, looks murderously at Sebastian.
She suffocated me. She suffocated me, and she hounded me. And she never let me be. She's a disease.
Her face hardens.
Mrs. Lester?
He's lying.
As Sebastian lunges at her, he's restrained.
Anna. He and Anna did it. For whatever reason of their own, they did it.
You bitch!
Everyone knows that she picks the mushrooms. And he follows her to the woods every morning. Perhaps they were found out and threatened with separation. My father-in-law beat him within an inch of his life the day before he died. And that boy was like a child to me.
Sebastian looks at her in disbelief. Agnes moves to comfort Catherine.
Anna will say if otherwise. I did nothing.
Anna tilts her head in shock as she's confronted by the doctor, Agnes, Catherine, and the other man standing behind the settee, all staring at her. Her eyes shift around the room, then back to Catherine, clutching her belly. Her eyes merciless. Anna closes her eyes and sways gently. She and Sebastian are shackled together on the bed of a moving cart. A wound on his cheek, Sebastian gazes up at the trees passing overhead with a look of calm resignation. Catherine lies on her front on her bed in her black widow's weeds, staring blankly. Two of the maids in their capes and bonnets leave the house carrying suitcases. Catherine walks along the corridor towards the steps leading to the rest of the house. She stands at a window. A woman's bonneted face is reflected in the glass for a moment. Then she turns and walks away. Upstairs, Catherine runs her hand along the banister as she slowly walks down the stairs. She comes into the parlor and closes the door. With one hand on her belly, she slowly comes to the front of the settee and sits down. She raises her head and stares straight ahead. Her once softly playful eyes now conveying a heart of darkness. The picture snaps to black. Based on Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk by Nikolai Liskov. Catherine was played by Florence Pugh. Sebastian, Osmo Jarvis. Alexander, Paul Hilton. Anna, Naomi Aki. Boris, Christopher Fairbank. Director, William Oldroyd. Writer, Alice Birch. Producer, Foda Cronin O'Reilly. Executive producers, Christopher Moll, Steve Jenkins, Lizzie Frank, Jim Reeve, Christopher Granier de Fer. Director of photography, Ari Wegner. Production designer, Jacqueline Abrahams. Editor, Nick Emerson. Casting director, Shaheen Beg. Costume designer, Molly Waddington. Hair and makeup designer, Sean Wilson. Line producer, Pete Smith. First assistant director, George Every. Sound recordist, Steve Peckover. Sound designers, Dan James, Ben Baird. Agnes was played by Golda Rocheville. Teddy, Anton Palmer. Mary, Rebecca Manley. Tessa, Fleur Houdic. Father Peter, Cliff Burnett. Edward, David Kirkbride. Dr. Burden, Bill Fellows. Mr. Robertson, Nicholas Lumley. Mr. Kirkbride, Raymond Finn. Detective Logan, Ian Cunningham. Farmhands, Finn Burbridge, Jack Robertson, Chemist Lasway, Elliot Sinclair. Gentlemen, Andrew Davis, Alan Billingham. Aston Palmer Double, Bailey Palmer. Associate Producer, Pete Smith. Production Manager, Robert K. Harm. Script Supervisor, Bhairavi Patel. Audio Description by Veronica Hicks. Audio Description Mixer, Jack Wensley. Audio Producer, Pam Thompson. FX and Dialogue Editor, Alexei Mungersdorf. Jamie McPhee. ADR Editor, Kevin Gallagher. Sound Re-Recording Mixer, Ben Baird. Composer, Dan Jones. Special thanks to Arthur Birch, Angels Costumes, Andy Gout, Ben Hilton, Bob Duff, Camille Griffin, Creative Skillset, Christina Roldan, Charles MacDonald, Cleo Barnard, David Nellist, Eddie Diaz, Ellis Cook, Ellen Parry, Giles Smart, James W. Griffiths, James Cotton, Jasmine Blackborough, Jennifer Hunting, Jed Jefferson, John Jefferson, Joseph Teague, Kristen Irving, Laura Smith, Lord Durham, Lambton Castle and Estate, Michelle Arnold, Michael O'Connor, Marie Manning, Matthias Pilz, Matt Weborosico, Clawsworth Hall Farm, Richard Batty, Sam Pritchard, Sylvia Laguno, Siobhan Palmer, Sean O'Shea, Teresa Moneo, Toby Newman. Filmed on location at Lambton Castle, County Durham, and Northumberland, United Kingdom. No animals were harmed during the making of this film. Made with the support of Great Point Media. Developed with the assistance of BBC Films. Made with the support of Creative England, a 66 Pictures and iFeatures production. Made with the support of the BFI's Film Fund. BFI Film Forever, awarding funds from the National Lottery. Copyright iFeatures Limited, 2016.